appeared before replying.
I'm glad this conversation is not being overheard,
he said with a slow smile.
For the first few days after your landing, the American media was in a furor about the fact that you were a Native American, a red man on the red planet. That was the mildest of their stories about you.
Jamie realized that the mission controllers had practically blacked out all news transmissions from Earth. For the first time, he understood that Kaliningrad and Houston were censoring the news from home.
The vice president is very sensitive to political nuances,
Brumado was going on.
She thought that a radical branch of the ethnic activist groups in the States might use you as a weapon against her. She wanted you removed from the ground team.
But Dr. Lee wouldn't let that happen, Jamie said to himself. The mission controllers wouldn't stand for such blatant political interference.
I have tried to convince her that you could become an asset to her campaign for the presidency if she will support further Mars expeditions instead of opposing them.
Jamie's head was spinning. Even before Brumado stopped speaking, he said, So you worked out a deal for me to make a statement supporting her, and then she makes a statement supporting continued exploration. Brumado kept on talking about how difficult the vice president could make everything if she insisted on Jamie's being removed from the ground team. It would even make Australia happy, he pointed out, to have O'Hara sent down to replace Jamie. Then at last he heard Jamie's words. He stopped short, muttered,
Wait.
Jamie realized that Brumado had an instant replay feature on his console, wherever on Earth he was. He watched Brumado's face as the Brazilian listened to his words.
Ah, yes, that is the deal. You send me a statement supporting the vice president. I hold it until she makes a public announcement of her support for further Mars missions. Then I give her people your statement. When you return from Mars, you announce your support of her candidacy. Everyone gets what they want. Everyone is happy.
Not quite everyone, Jamie thought. Then he heard himself say, There's one thing more. I want the schedule rearranged so we can go back to Typhonium Chasma before we leave. Otherwise, no deal. Alberto Brumado felt his jaw drop. He was accustomed to demands and counter-demands from the politicians, even from the academics who ruled universities. But to get one from this young pup of a scientist was something of a shock. Rearrange the mission schedule? But that would be impossible. He watched Waterman's stolid, broad-cheeked face as his words raced to Mars with the speed of light. It seemed to take forever. Finally, Waterman replied,
Either we go back to Typhonium Chasma and take a good look at that rock formation, or there's no deal. I know that she'll demand that I be taken off the ground team and O'Hara brought down to replace me. Okay. If she does that, I'll yell my head off once we've returned to Earth. I'll tell the media that I was removed from the ground team because I'm a Native American and she's against full political rights for ethnic minorities.
Brumado felt perspiration breaking out across his forehead.
You are putting me, the entire project administration, in a very difficult situation.
Waterman's reply when it came was,
That can't be helped. This is important. Much more important than who gets elected next year. We've got to go back to the canyon.
All right, Brumado said reluctantly. I'll see what I can do.
He waited long, long minutes before he saw Jamie Waterman's answering smile. The deal was done. Now to get the project administrators to agree to it, and then implement it with the vice president's aides, and make certain that she has no way to back out of it. Brumado ended his transmission to Mars and rose from his chair, weary, drained, more than a little fearful, like an athlete who had given his last ounce of strength and now waited for the judge's verdict. There must be a second expedition sent to Mars. There must be. At least that. At the very least. Glancing down at the blank gray screen of the communications console, he realized that Waterman was both an asset and a liability. It's a mistake to get him involved in the politics of this thing. He does not think politically. All he is interested in is the science. He is aflame to make a great discovery on Mars, so much so that he could ruin everything. Thank God we could speak in private, Brumado said to himself. With the time lag between us, it was difficult enough to get anything agreed to. It would have been impossible if others had been listening in. More than 150 million kilometers away, Tony Reed stared thoughtfully at the dead screen of his own laptop. He had gone from the dome's communication center to his infirmary, slid the accordion fold door shut, and immediately tuned in on Jamie's conversation with Brumado. As the team's physician and psychologist, I have every right to know exactly what is going on, he had told himself. Secrecy be damned. They have no right to keep secrets from me. Now he removed the plug from his ear and yanked out the hair-thin wire that connected it to his computer. So Jamie's forcing them to send him back to Typhonium Chasma. Good. It can't be soon enough. Sol 14. Afternoon. Jamie had been unusually silent and moody at lunch, Tony Reed thought. Even for our stoic red man, he's being awfully quiet and withdrawn. Reed was sitting at his infirmary desk, mulling over Jamie's conversation with Brumado. A man has cheek, Tony thought, almost admiringly. Whatever inner demons are driving him, he has the gall to make demands on Brumado himself and the Vice President of the United States. Smiling to himself, Reed thought, with any luck at all, he'll be banished to the orbiting spacecraft and leave Ioana to me. Humming tunelessly, Reed tapped at his computer keyboard, calling up the afternoon schedule. Six of the seven scientists were supposed to be continuing the tedious business of mapping the depth and extent of the underground permafrost layer. Toshima, the seventh, would remain inside the dome, working with his meteorology instruments. Reed had no responsibilities for outside work, one of the advantages of being team physician, he told himself. Tony punched up his personal mission task schedule on the computer screen and saw that it was time for his weekly inventory of pharmaceutical supplies. With a barely suppressed moan of boredom, he started by checking out the stocks of analgesics and vitamins. Next would come the uppers and downers. Have to be especially careful with them. Can't have these people depending on drugs. The sound startled him. What on earth was that? Reed cocked his ears, but heard nothing more than the usual hums of machinery and the distant, muffled voices of the others. With a shrug, he turned his attention back to the task at hand. Wearily, he went through the computer's file on the analgesics. Every aspirin tablet must be accounted for. No one was allowed to take even one on his own. Only the team physician could dispense the pills, and he had to keep a strict record of who received what. Everyone took vitamins, of course. Reed slid the box of vitamin bottles out of its rack in the container bin and toted it to his desk. Four big bottles of 500 each. Just one of the pills provided all the daily vitamin supplement a person required. Carrying 2,000 of them to the surface was typical mission overkill. With a light pen, Reed began to check the barcodes printed on the lids of each jar, like a supermarket clerk checking out groceries. Damned silly busy work, he grumbled to himself. Yet if the computer did not show a bottle-by-bottle check of the inventory, Vosnesensky would be up in arms. All mission tasks must be accomplished, as far as the Russian was concerned, no matter how trivial or boring. Then a new thought struck him. If Jamie has his way and returns to the Grand Canyon, he'll probably want to take Ioana with him. She's the mission biologist, after all. Damn him, Reed snarled silently. There's got to be a way to get this insolent red man separated from the Brazilian princess. Let's hope they banish him to orbit. Puck! Same sound again, only fainter this time. What could it be? Reed asked himself as he unscrewed the first of the vitamin bottles. Might as well transfer them to the smaller bottles while I've got them out. Tony grumbled to himself about the efficiency experts who had planned the mission logistics. They had overlooked the fact that these giant-sized bottles did not fit in the galley shelves. He had to transfer the vitamin capsules by hand to smaller bottles that did. Utterly stupid nonsense. Puck! Puck! Reed jumped to his feet, knocking over the open bottle. Vitamin pills spilled across his desk, rolled onto the floor.
Everyone, into your...